to the audio event of the century, featuring two lifelong best friends. We love the Leafs. We love each other. But most of all, we love William Nylander. Welcome to the Buds All Day Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Buds All Day Podcast. I'm Sats Mundine here with Lebda's Legacy.
How's it going, everyone?
And tonight we're going to recap the Toronto Maple Leafs 2-1 overtime loss to the New York Rangers. Now, the Rangers got their goals from Mika Zibanejad and Artemi Panarin, which is very par for the course for them. Two excellent players. And the Leafs got their goal from discount hero Michael Bunting. Now, Lebda, what did you think of tonight's game?
Yeah, I mean, there is really nothing to complain about from tonight's game from a Leafs perspective, except for the actual final score of the game. Like, when we look at it, the Leafs sitting at 68% on the deserve-to-win-o-meter. Corsi 4 percentage was at 57%, scoring chances 4 at 60%. High danger Corsi 4 at 60%, and expected goals at 63% for them to the night. And, I mean, all that considering, that's after a very, very even first period, and the last two periods of that game were just absolutely all Leafs. And, I mean, they ran into a hot goalie, and Shesterkin played absolutely out of his mind.
Yeah, I was just saying to my dad throughout the game, it just kind of felt like the Canadian series all over again. Leafs just hemming them in their zone, constantly getting chances. Probably a few more grade A chances tonight than that in that Canadian series, but it was just the same kind of thing. The other team just hangs around, and then makes one nice play and the game is over.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't bury your chances, and it's very, very tough to win in this league. Now, from, you know, my perspective on if we need to freak out of this team or not, like, it's much better to have a good process and maybe not get the results we want early on than to have a bad process and maybe sneak out a couple results and then, you know, ignore the flaws with our team going forward and just, like, you know, kind of like the 2013 Leafs where we're just getting dominated every game but still winning. At least now the Leafs are playing good now. They had Austin Matthews come in and he dominated. He didn't put the puck in the back of the net, but we all know that's not going to continue to keep happening for him. So, again, the signs are positive even if we didn't get the result.
Yeah, and you talk about Austin Matthews tonight. You could see why the Toronto Maple Leafs missed him, because in his first game, 23 minutes of ice time, 8 shots on goal, won 80% of his faceoffs, looked like he could have scored about 5 or 6 times on the game, led the team in expected goals at 74%. He looks healthy. He looks great. Maybe just a little rust that he's not finishing, but boy, oh boy, was it nice to have 34 back.
I mean, we're getting the second best player in the NHL back into our lineup. And something I do want to bring up is Austin Matthews last year scored 22% of the Leafs' goals, which was the most in the NHL for any player on one team. And it's like, you know, we kind of hear people getting upset about the Leafs' slow start. And even tonight, I've seen a little bit of it, like, oh, we just couldn't bury one. And it's like, yeah, Austin Matthews scored almost a quarter of the team's goals. When he's missing, you're going to struggle to score goals as a Leafs team. He also takes up almost $12 million of your salary cap. Like, that's a huge chunk. So it's not fair to say, like, oh, yeah, like a team like, you know, Montreal is missing X and X, or Edmonton's missing X and X players, because, like, they're not Austin Matthews. And when a guy's that good at hockey and that big on your team, you're going to miss him. And maybe you have a slow start, and we'll attribute that to tonight. Like we said, like, the Leafs dominated the game. The rest of their team's looking good. Their lineup's looking, you know, very solid, and there's guys filling the roles, and William Nylander is becoming a great secondary scorer for them. And now you add the second best player of the game, comes back, looks great. Like you said, a little bit of rust. Maybe he's, you know, not finishing the way he normally would. That's not going to last long. So, again, overreacting about this Leafs team, I'm not there yet.
Yeah, I don't understand why. Like, I was listening to a radio show, and they were kind of talking about what you were saying and how they couldn't score without Matthews. Like, other teams can survive. Look at Tampa without Kucherov. It's like, Kucherov is an exceptional player. He's not Austin Matthews. I know in the playoffs, different story, but if we're looking at these guys' careers, he's not Austin Matthews. And to compare yourselves to Tampa, that's like the absolute cream of the cream of the crop. But you'd look at any other team who has a player who is as good as Austin Matthews, the only two would be Edmonton and Colorado. You took McDavid off Edmonton, they're done. You took McKinnon off Colorado, because they're such a juggernaut of a team, they'd probably be kind of like the Leafs. They would still win them. Like, they'd be a playoff caliber team, but you're taking out a player who's just on another planet. And yeah, he's taking up $12 million of your cap. I hope you don't look nearly as good without a guy who's doing that, because that is clearly a very crucial part of your team. And yeah, he looks like he's ready to explode on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to add too, like, let's think of the reverse side of this. Let's look at a team we all know very well, the Montreal Canadiens. And there's lots of talk about, you know, their center depth and how they have cheap center, like, or their good centermen are locked up cheaper than, you know, the Leafs or whatever. And it's like, yeah, because they're not Auston Matthews. Imagine how good Montreal Canadiens center depth would be if they had Jack Eichel in their team. But because everyone on that team is playing, you know, one slot above what maybe they should in the NHL, it's just not near as good. And that's what happens when Auston Matthews is in the lineup. John Tavares, fantastic player. First line caliber center. Maybe he's the exception, but then you go down to your second line. Alex Kerfoot isn't a 2C in this league, even with William Nylander carrying him on a line. Like, let's face it, Alex Kerfoot is not, you know, a second centerman. And then you have more ice time for guys that, you know, aren't used to it or play different roles, like David Kampf, used in a defensive role, used to, you know, shut other guys down, not so much in an offensive role. And when Auston Matthews is out of the lineup, then all these guys are just playing roles they're not, you know, primed to play. And that affects the team. And it's natural. It happens to every team. It's not like the Leafs have one player out and all of a sudden they implode, and that doesn't happen to other teams. Like, yes, when very good hockey players miss, their teams miss them very, very much.
Yeah, it just puts everyone in the right spot. That's exactly it. And John Tavares at this point, I don't think he's a true first-line center. He's one of the 30 best centers in the league, but he's well-suited to being that second-line center who can, on a line with William Nylander, they're not going to face the other team's best. And although he didn't produce many, he got an assist tonight, Tavares. I think you're going to see him and Nylander explode together very, very soon. Just because everybody's going to be in their right role, and that is so critical for a team. Now, getting into the actual events of the game, the game did start on a kind of a sour note for the Leafs with Mika Zibanejad breaking the scoring midway through the first.
Yeah, this one's tough from a number of Leafs here. First of all, Jack Campbell has the puck behind the net. He looks like he's in a good position to, you know, make a play or ring it up the boards or at least do something safe with it. And I don't know if he just didn't get a good grip or on a stick, but it looked weird. He played a weird thing. Michael Bunting isn't quick enough to react. Ryan Reeves kind of takes him out along the boards. Puck falls to John Tavares, who just kind of blindly whips it through the middle, goes right to Zibanejad. It's a pretty good shot. Like, it's a great shot location, kind of goes bar, camera, and out. At first, they didn't know if it went in, and calling the ice didn't really do anything. But then, yeah, they took a look at it, very clearly went in. And yeah, I personally think it's one that Jack Campbell needs to make a save on, but it's not, you know, a backbreaker, but it's just a silly, sloppy play from a number of Leafs there.
Yeah, and Jack Campbell, that is by no means a criticism of his game as a whole, because he was really, I thought, really good for the Leafs tonight. He didn't face a ton in the way of shots, but it seemed like, especially in that third period, every time he did get a shot, it was a grade A chance, and he was up to the task. He really helped the Leafs get a point, even though clearly they deserve two. But yeah, that goal, not his best moment, but on the whole, you got to be pretty happy with his performance.
Yeah, Jack Campbell did exactly what, you know, the Leafs need their goaltender to do. Now, normally they're not going to be facing, you know, goaltending of the quality that Shesterkin played tonight. But the Leafs dominating the game. Puck gets, you know, whether it's a turnover or whether it's just New York coming down on a chance, those things happen. Jack Campbell's there pretty much every time to make the save. The only time he didn't make the save was 1-0. And, I mean, your goalie giving up one goal in a game, you're going to win 9.5 times out of 10. So, again, nothing Jack Campbell's real fault. Maybe he should stop playing the puck. Cough, cough. Maybe every NHL goalie should stop playing the puck. But at least it makes for, you know, some hilarious moments on SportsCenter.
You know what I really do think? Like maybe the whole don't play the puck at all is a little too far. But honestly, on that penalty in the kill in the third, he played it and there was a scary moment. I do think that there should be a strict do not leave your net on a penalty kill moment because we don't have the guys to back up. If he goes out there and he makes the mistake, all of a sudden the Rangers have an extra guy there. That's going to end up a goal more times than not. So I think he needs to definitely limit his puck playing at 5-on-5 and completely cut it off shorthanded. And that lead did go into the first intermission for the Rangers there, but Michael Bunting was able to make it a 1-1 game very quickly into the second period.
Yeah, this is the kind of goal I think Leaf fans are really crying out for this team to start scoring. It's a really nice play by Brody, Willie, and JT. They kind of team up and make a nice breakout, get the puck to Morgan Riley in the neutral zone, carries it through the neutral zone in past the blue line, skates doesn't deke his way through the whole Rangers team, but basically skates through them, ends up with the puck in the corner and just throws it onto the net. And, you know, Michael Bunting doing what he's supposed to do on that line, just absolutely crashes the net hard. He kind of deflects it, maybe goes off a leg, maybe a stick. And then the Rangers D-man just pushes Bunting and Shesterkin into the net. And I don't know really how it went in, but somehow the puck just trickles over the line. And again, this is exactly what you want to see from Michael Bunting on that line.
Yeah, what we've seen from Michael Bunting, this version of Michael Bunting is an answer to a ton of questions that the Leafs have. One question, can the Leafs replace Zach Hyman? Again, we don't expect him to be the full version of Zach Hyman, but the way he's playing so far, it's not completely out of the question. And he's really providing a lot of what we're missing on the left wing. The second question that he's answering is that we know Sheldon Keefe and Kyle Dubas in that documentary talked about getting playoff style goals, getting those goals in the dirty areas, not just being able to dangle through or score off the rush or things like that, just getting into those tough areas to get into and being able to bat pucks home. It doesn't have to be pretty. In fact, we have enough guys to score pretty goals. You want a guy like Michael Bunting who, when the going gets tough, you know he's got his nose to the net and he's going to bury it more often than not. He's got good hands in there. And honestly, if he can keep this up, he may be the signing of the NHL offseason.
He absolutely could be the best signing, and we talked about it all offseason. We talked about it before. Those are the type of signings that Kyle Dubas loves to make and he's going to continue to make. Do all of them hit? No. This one looks like it's definitely going to be a hit. I mean, Michael Bunting is very quickly going to become a fan favorite. It's too bad he chose such an ugly number, or else I might have a jersey of his in the mail, but hey, he keeps this up, and I might even change my mind on that too. Now, that also brings up kind of our next topic, or what I want to talk about next, is we have the really good, you know, low risk, high reward signings. And then we have the other side of it, which is Nick Ritchie and how he has performed so far on that Leafs first line.
Yeah, we said this in our offseason plan. We wanted Dubas to go after guys like Bunting. We wanted him to go after Kasha. We were fine with the Ritchie signing. Even a guy like David Kampf, you throw a bunch of these pieces at the wall and some of them are going to stick and some of them aren't. And right now, although it's quickly in, it looks like Nick Ritchie is not sticking, at least in that top six role. He really, you know, he's not grading out well in terms of expected goals. He's actually last among forwards on the team after four games with 48%. He just looks slow out there. He doesn't look fully engaged. We basically know what he is at this point. He's a guy who has good hands around the net in those tight areas. Maybe he can score some of those playoff style goals for us later, but in pretty much every other area of the ice, he looks very disappointing right now.
I think I was looking just for a lot more from Nick Ritchie, and you know, I'm not expecting him to come in and score 30 goals and all of a sudden look amazing and like a true first line talent out there. But honestly, I'm watching him play and I see nothing. He doesn't look like he's, you know, bringing that physical aspect that so many people talked about. He's not getting it done in front of the net. He seems to be in poor position. He seems to, you know, when he has the puck, either just dump it in, or like you're playing with, you know, John Tavares and Mitch Marner and now Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner. You can't just chip and chase with those guys. It's not good enough. And it's not okay. And if that kind of play keeps up, they're going to have to break that line up and they're going to have to try and find another option there. But also, like, I want to see a little bit of, you know, bite, a little bit of grit, a little bit of heart and desire. Because to me, it just looks like a player who's coasting. And, you know, and the NHL is tough, and being a top six winger in the NHL is very, very tough. And maybe he's just not ready for it. And I don't think that's us overreacting to just a couple games early on in the season. You know, we saw it with Boston. He was, you know, very good against lower competition in Boston. And then as soon as he got moved up and started playing against greater competition, he started to not perform so well and not grade out so well. So maybe Nick Ritchie is just a bottom six forward, and that's fine. It's just you can't have, you know, a player weighing down Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner in that way. You have to find something that works there. And, you know, maybe it is Nick Ritchie, and maybe we're being a little bit too quick to be so critical, but I think we need to start looking at other options in the very, very near future.
So this season to me is basically an audition. It's like Kawhi Leonard said, it's 82 practices. You're just getting ready for the playoffs. And that's why I'm okay with Sheldon Keefe leaving Nick Ritchie on that line for a few more games to see if he can work, because I want Keefe this year to try out every possible option that he can. Like right now, my ideal top six would probably have Bunting with the Matthews line, and then Kerfoot as the left wing on that second line with Nylander and Tavares. But I am okay with giving Ritchie a bit of a chance for that for now. But you made a very key point, and that is that a lot of the stats gurus that we saw on Twitter said that Nick Ritchie thrived in the third line role for Boston when his line was playing against lower end competition, and did struggle a lot more against the top competition. And if you're playing with Matthews and Marner, even Willie and Tavares, you're going to be facing at least top four defensemen pretty much every time out there. And those defensemen are going to be guys who are really a lot better at clearing the net front, which is his kind of area to go to. So I think ideally for me, when we have a fully healthy lineup, when Ilya Mikheyev's back, you can have a fourth line with Spezza, Engvall for a little bit of speed and transition. And then you can have a guy like Ritchie there who, you know, you just send him at the net. You have Spezza wristing shots and Nick Ritchie crashing the net to get some finishes. So I think by the end of the year, he is going to end up in that, maybe that bottom six scoring role. Cause I don't see him really being valuable on that David Kampf line either. He's too slow to be used in a shutdown role. So I think the only option for him is to be on that fourth line role in a scoring capacity, or to be honest, being used as trade fodder to even up cap hits.
Yeah, and that's my almost little bit of an issue with Nick Ritchie, is his $2.5 million cap hit worth it on the fourth line for this Leafs team? Now, if that fourth line, like you said, I think that's my ideal combination too. Nick Ritchie, Jason Spezza, Pierre Engvall. You have Pierre Engvall there, and we saw what Pierre Engvall did tonight, and that Spezza, Simmons, Engvall line actually performed very well tonight. And I think that's due to, you know, Pierre Engvall's ability to actually get the puck through the neutral zone and into the offensive zone, so that guys like Spezza and Simmons can start to thrive and start to do the things that they've done well over their career. Still Wayne Simmons, you know, I'm not going to criticize him because they played very well tonight, but if we could put Nick Ritchie on that line instead, then maybe we get some great, great results from that. And then maybe his 2.5 cap hit doesn't matter so much, because you're getting a really nice production out of your fourth line. But it is a question to bring up. And I mean, I'm sure it's something Kyle Dubas will think about if, you know, we get closer to the deadline time and Nick Ritchie's $2.5 million cap hit is sitting on our fourth line. Like, oh, that's just the easy guy out. But yeah, I'm very, very curious to see what happens to Nick Ritchie. And again, like I said, I really want to just start seeing some more desire to perform and a little bit more, you know, of those intangibles that so many people said he was going to bring to the team.
And it's really funny to hear that he doesn't have that desire too, because I know, Lebda, you and I, back in the 2014 draft when Nick Ritchie was selected the same year as William Nylander, Dave Nonis was still our GM, and you and I, all draft night, we didn't even know too much about Willie Nylander. All we knew that night was that we didn't want Nick Ritchie, and when William Nylander's name was called, you and I were dancing in my living room. And the funny thing is that all of the people who were some of those old heads who still like that rough and tumble hockey were basically saying they wanted Ritchie because they want someone to drag the guys into the fight, someone to be that tough, hardworking guy. And it's hilarious to think about it, because Nick Ritchie kind of has a bit of a reputation as a lazy player now. Meanwhile, William Nylander is known for being the first guy on practice, the last guy to leave. He's been an absolute dominant force for us again tonight. Just, he looks like a man amongst boys at times. It's just kind of a funny contrast to look back on 7 years later.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's another one of those things where it's like, don't judge a book by its cover. Just because a guy's big, just because he, you know, maybe looks like he does certain things, doesn't mean he does certain things. And to the same point, just because a guy's absolutely gorgeous and Swedish doesn't mean he's going to be a soft around the perimeter player. Like, different hockey players do different things. And I tell you right now, boy, am I glad we didn't trade William Nylander for Dick Ritchie like so many people were calling for all those years ago too.
Oh, what was that? That Brian Burke. I remember that graphic on Sportsnet. He said they should trade him for Nick Ritchie and Brandon Montour.
Oof. Boy, did we absolutely miss a big one there. But yeah, again, it's like we talk about. We're not going to overreact to Nick Ritchie's play over four games, but we just need to start seeing more from Nick Ritchie.
No, one guy I do want to give another shout out to is, this is a guy that you and I, we said we weren't too crazy about signing him, because as the offseason grew along, we became more comfortable with the David Kampf signing. But after four games, I got to say, I have been really impressed with him. He doesn't pop offensively, but he just seems to always push the puck in the right direction. He starts every single shift in the defensive zone, and he has a 57% expected goals. Like, you got to give credit to Kasha for that too, because he's doing a lot on that line. But that is one area of the team that I'm very excited about.
Yeah, like I said, this is where, you know, you really got to dive deep into the stats, as opposed to even some stats guys. And, you know, me and Sats love our stats too, but our initial reactions were like, ooh, I don't know. And as you start digging deeper and you get, you know, more down kind of the stats wormhole, then you start to see, oh, okay, maybe this guy is going to be good in a certain role. And, you know, maybe the kind of baseline stats or the more popular ones don't tell the whole story about David Kampf. And we're really, really seeing that, like that. And that's why, you know, guys in the pro front offices, they get paid to do this, because they look at those stats. They have those things available and they can see, like, oh, we're looking for this type of player. This guy fits it. Let's give him a go and let's see. And yeah, I mean, that line has just been absolutely beautiful. And I think to your point too, like, Andre Kosh definitely deserves some credit for that. I really hope Andre Kosh isn't one of those players that Leaf fans start to turn on a little bit, because his offensive numbers aren't there. And I think that's what a lot of people are expecting from him. Because yeah, like we said, like, that him and David Kampf on that line, whether it was Engvall or whether it was Alex Kerfoot there tonight, like, they do so many nice things for the team, and they really free up our top six to do some good things as well, not having to face all the tough matchups all the time defensively, because that line is good enough to play against some top six lines in the NHL.
Yeah, David Kampf, he's I think so far at least, he's been an example of why you can't just take the stats, even the advanced stats that you and I look at, the goals above replacement, the RAPMs, you can't look at those as complete gospel. You have to combine them with the eye test, because the NHL teams, they have a wide array of stats that we don't have access to. So they may have known a little something more, and those stats could have been skewed because David Kampf was on the worst defensive team in the NHL. He had Duncan Keith probably playing with him half the time. So that's going to just absolutely sewer you. And yeah, I've been really happy with him. And Kasha, speaking of his lack of offense, I wonder if the Leafs are like doubly happy with having him in this role. He's being able to shut the other team down, and he's performing well, although he's not scoring. And if he's going to do that, I mean, you might be able to lock him up for cheaper in the offseason again.
Well, that's the thing, you know. Point totals seem to be what NHL GMs go off of when they're giving out salaries. At least point totals and, you know, past reputation, cough Seth Jones. But yeah, like, if Andre, and to that point too, if Andre Kasch feels comfortable, like, he's been a guy who's struggled with injuries. He's kind of always had that potential and just struggled to find a fit. If he finds a nice fit with this Leafs team and he's comfortable and, you know, he stays healthy and he gets a run in and he's happy with the doctors and happy, you know, with his setup, then again, he could be, like you said, one of those guys that you get just on a cheap deal. And, you know, 2 years from now, we're like, how do we have this guy for only $2 million and he's performing this well? Kind of like Zach Hyman back in the day. I know, a little bit different, but yeah, you got to try and find value in these tight salary cap times in the NHL. And hey, maybe it's just some 3D chess by Keith keeping him down there instead of giving him that top six shot right away.
All right, now getting into our stars of the game. Lebda, who did you have?
Well, I think tonight, I mean, it's always a little bit tougher when you lose, but I think whenever a guy who plays, you know, a lower role in the team plays as exceptional, I think you got to give it to one of them. So I'm going to take Travis Dermott tonight.
Meanwhile, back at Mama's, the porch light's on. Come on in if you want to. Supper's on the stove and beer's in the fridge.
80% expected goals on the evening, according to MoneyPuck. And that's only with 11 minutes, essentially, of ice time. So I don't know what Sheldon Keefe was doing tonight with his bench. But, yeah, Travis Dermott and, I mean, to be fair, Rasmus Sandin to an extent, too. They both played absolutely beautiful. That was one of the biggest question marks we had of this team coming in, is what that bottom six is going to – or, sorry, what that bottom pair is going to look like. And, hey, Travis Dermott, Rasmus Sandin playing this well with a, you know, extra emphasis on Dermott, I'm not going to complain about that.
I couldn't agree more. You could have given it to him or Sandin. Sandin looked excellent again, too, with his, you know, just the hesitations with the puck at the blue line. Like, they need more than 11 minutes, especially when Hall and Muzzin are playing the way that they are. And we're kind of going to get into that in a little bit here. My star, I'm just going to be quick with it. I'm giving it to Igor Shesterkin. It's blasphemy. Because without him, that game would have been like 5-1 Leafs. So you just look at his stats tonight. He had over 40 saves and only allowed one goal, and the Leafs had 3.4 expected goals and allowed one. He allowed one. So he had 2.4 goals saved above expected. That's a quarter of a season's worth of goals above expected for an above average goalie. So, I mean, you just got to give him a tip of the cap for that one. Now, Lebda, let's get into a couple questions. I know we sent out a couple questions to our followers on Twitter today, and the first one about the game was, how can the Leafs keep Riley, Nylander, and Marner? And Jedi Dave also added, not possible. He said, side note, extend Bunting now. So, Lebda, how can we keep Riley, Nylander, and Marner?
Yeah, Michael Bunting has 2 years, so we can't extend him right now, so we'll just quick check off that one. And honestly, the rest of the question is pretty easy. I'm sure we've already covered it, but you just let Riley walk in free agency. I know it's not the nicest sounding thing, but if he's unless he takes a just crazy hometown discount, we're not going to be able to re-sign Morgan Riley. He's definitely on that list of players, the one who you let walk. So again, it's pretty simple to me. Now, another question that's coming from Salming51 on Twitter. Is it time to give Muzzin and Hall some time apart?
I got to think yes to this for Salming 51. Now, we've seen Muzzin and Hall. They have not looked themselves all year, and that's probably more Jake Muzzin than anything. I think Justin Hall this whole time was kind of being dragged along by Jake Muzzin, and because Muzzin's unable to do that, that pair is really struggling as a whole. They were on for the only goal against in regulation tonight, although I wouldn't have really blamed it on them. But you look at Jake Muzzin, 40% expected goals. Justin Hall was at 51%. Both very bad compared to the rest of the team. And I don't know what's wrong with Muzzin. If he's nursing an injury, which kind of looks like to me, if he is, you have to give him a rest. You have a capable guy there in Timothy Liljegren you can slide in. These games are not vital. And to be honest, I don't think Jake or Timothy Liljegren could do much worse than Muzzin is doing right now.
Yeah, I made a note of it, and I think I actually sent you a message saying there's no way Jake Muzzin isn't hurt right now. He looks uncomfortable, and he's doing things that are not, you know, classic Jake Muzzin things. And he was amazing last year in the playoffs. Like, you don't just fall off a cliff like that in a couple months. So I think, yeah, whether Jake Muzzin needs some rest or he just needs to kind of play through something and regain confidence or regain, you know, trust in his body again, then we'll see. And yeah, I mean, Justin Hall has always been a bit of a fraudulent top four defenseman. He's just got dragged along from Jake Muzzin. So, I mean, why not try someone else there? But yeah, moving on to a couple more questions. One from our boy Joe Diamond on Twitter, and the other one from Maple Leaf Fan on Twitter as well, both to do with Nick Ritchie. I heard Dubas signed Ritchie. Was wondering when he'll play from the Maple Leafs. That's from Joe Diamond. And then what do we do with Nick Ritchie? More time on that first line, question mark. Move him, question mark. If so, where? The first kind of two we already answered in the podcast. So, I mean, if we're going to move him, if so, where? Anywhere that we can get a true top six forward from would be my answer to that one.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier. I'd give him a bit more time on that first line. If he can't thrive there, let him go on the fourth line, try to score. And if he can't do that, move him at the deadline. Now, The last question from Dominique Richard. He said, how many games do we get to before Marner and Tavares need a good kick in the ass?
This is a bit of a tough one because I'll be honest. I think you and me both fall under this category. We're going to end up having to defend Mitch Marner a little bit more this season. We kind of started that train last playoffs where everyone was just ripping on him. And I mean, we got a little bit of pie in our face from that one because he ended up not doing anything. But last year, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and Zach Hyman were one of, if not the best line in the NHL when it comes to, you know, most offensive stats. Sure, they lost Zach Hyman. Maybe they're still looking for a replacement on that line. But let's be honest, Zach Hyman wasn't the driving force behind that line. It was Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews. Those guys will be fine. Mitch Marner will be looking at it at the end of the year and will be like, oh, he has 100 points or at least close to it, and Austin Matthews is an Austin Matthews. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think you need to give Marner a kick in the ass at this point. I think it'll just come for him having his good buddy Austin Matthews. Clearly, those two play better together than they do apart, so I think we're fine on that. John Tavares, I'm a little bit more concerned about, but I mean, this guy has been in the NHL for how long? He's been one of the best players in the NHL for how long? Like, he doesn't need a kick in the ass. He's going to kick himself in the ass. I think eventually this guy's going to get going. With how good William Nylander's playing, he's going to get dragged into the fight by Willie anyways. So, again, I think it's just people overreacting a little bit on these two guys. Give it another 5-10 games, and I think we'll all be singing a bit of a different tune with Marner and Tavares this season.
With Tavares, we saw the same kind of thing last year. He did start really slow. He's coming off an injury now. I'm not thrilled with the way he's played, but by the same token, he hasn't been bad. He's put up a 55% expected goals through these four games, playing against the other team's best line most nights until tonight, although the best lines of the Canadiens and the Habs are not much to talk about. But it's like we said all year last year when Tavares started slowly. We said he's doing the right things. He's just not getting the bounces. The pucks aren't going in, even though he's generating chances. I would be worried if he wasn't generating anything, but I do see quite a lot coming from him. And the same goes for Mitch Marner. He's generated a lot of plays. If John Tavares finishes two of his 24 shots or whatever he had in the first few games, both him and Marner are looking a lot different. If a goalie makes a mistake, they're both looking a lot different. So I don't think there's too much to be worried about. The only thing Marner needs, I think rather than a kick on the ass, I think he just needs a hug. Just give him a pat on the back, because I think he's obviously, we know that he pays attention to social media, or at least he did, and that kind of stuff bothered him in the past. And it can't have been an easy summer for him. And although it is to an extent self-inflicted by him demanding such a huge contract, that's good in the past. And I think we just kind of need to support him. Like, I know as a professional athlete, you got to deal with it yourself, but we know what a talent he is, and there's kind of a vitriol towards him in Leaf Nation, and people almost, like, it's like they want to see him fail. And I wanted him traded for the right package in the offseason too, but he didn't get traded. He's an exceptional player. He's still creating chances. They're not going in, but he's playing with Austin Matthews. They're going to go in eventually. And I hope he makes us all look silly in the playoffs this year. And I think that's got to start with him gaining confidence and feeling happier in the regular season.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that actually watching that All or Nothing documentary did for me was kind of ease off on my Mitch Marner hate. Like, after that game 7 and that last episode, like, he was the most devastated. He was the most angry. He was the most pissed off. Now, to that point, he needs to come out and prove this year and show that, you know, sure, he's mad, but do something about it. So there is still that factor. But yeah, it moved me from being very, very angry at Mitch Marner to, you know, almost feeling bad for him, like kind of what you said as well. So yeah, I think it'll come for both these guys. I don't think it's time to panic at all with these guys.
And that's a really good point for you to make, that I don't think with Mitch Marner, it's certainly never a lack of effort or a lack of caring. The guy, it's almost, his issue is almost that he cared too much in the playoffs. I think he cared so much and he let the pressure get to him. So I know the Leafs hired a new sports psychologist. I hope that can help him. And because we know he can do it. He's so capable. We just need to see him do it. Once, we've said it 1,000 times. Once they get past one round, I think the demons are gone and the limits are endless. So I just hope to see him flourish this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Once we win one round, put all your money on the cup, because we're going to win one and then we're going to win it all. But hey, you know, time will come. And the time has come for us to end this podcast tonight. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you to everyone who submitted questions. And if you are listening and you do want to submit a question after the next game that the Leafs play, follow us at Twitter at BudsAllDayCast. Keep up to date on everything Leafs and everything Buds All Day podcast on there. And yeah, thank you very much for listening and have a good night.